Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Politician by Emma Nichols. Narrated by Jessica Jeffries. Prologue. She stared beyond the glistening white slopes into the deep blue. It wasn't the descending sun that caused Sarah's cheeks to tingle, but the chill that was starting to set in. A gust of wind whipped up the untouched powdery snow as she made her way towards the start of her final run for the day. This was Verbier, the backside of Montfort, with a panoramic view over some of the most spectacular peaks bordering Switzerland and France. It was her favourite place for her 1 week away from the stresses of work and family, and a week living in obscurity. While she always felt a twinge of guilt being away from her children, she needed the break for her sanity. She'd watched the sun rise in the warmth of her cabin that morning, while drinking rich hot chocolate and eating her favourite breakfast of a fried egg sandwich. The breeze had steadily increased during the day, perhaps saving itself for her final run. The thrill of finishing the day with the toughest challenge had never lost its appeal in all the years she'd skied. Even as a child, she'd pushed and pleaded for one final run. Do or die, she thought of it then. Now, it was a peak moment, a final test of her tenacity. She'd traversed these slopes under worse conditions, so she was ready for the moguls and the kiss of ice she might encounter. Glancing down the sheer drop, her heart thundered. Après-ski called to her. She squinted from the glare of the snow and pulled her goggles over her eyes. The shield relaxed her focus. Orienting herself and imagining the route down that she'd taken many times before, she took 3 deep breaths and thrust the skis forwards. She carved a route through the powder. The wind whipped around her jacket and whooshed past her ears. She started to track the skier who had joined the slope ahead of her. She'd seen the same red hat on a woman on the ski lift earlier. She looked competent enough, but with this breeze and the deceptively blue skies that could give the impression the route was a walk in the park, someone less skilled could easily underestimate the conditions. Not every skier was diligent. Risks had to be calculated, and calculating risk was something Sarah had achieved an excellent level of proficiency at, working in politics. She turned into the slope and cut past a mogul to her left, bringing her closer to the rock face, but still in sight of the skier below her. A white spray coated her arms and for a moment clouded her vision. She swung right and gained speed until she caught sight of the hat moving below. She crouched lower and drove on faster, cutting tighter turns, sparked by the challenge and intent on getting to the base first. If this was the woman with stunning blue eyes and beautiful smile who had caught her eye earlier, maybe she would invite her for a drink afterwards. Surrounded by snow and rock, Sarah skied deeper into the slope, and the sun slid from view. She glanced across to see a ski fly into the air, and the red hat skidded across the snow. Her heart raced, and she turned towards the felled skier. The woman stood as Sarah approached and brushed herself down. Sarah pulled up, lifted her goggles, and squinted as the woman reclaimed her ski. She was moving okay, so had clearly taken the fall well. Sarah smiled and held back a chuckle at the woman's exasperated expression. All good? She asked. The woman shook the snow from her hat and raised her goggles. Sure, nothing more frustrating than a rookie error. Sarah laughed. This woman was no rookie. Yep, focuses the attention. The woman snapped her boot into her ski and brushed the snow from her jacket. Thanks for checking. Would you like to get a drink when we get to the bottom? The woman narrowed her eyes, then smiled. Sure, I'll need something to soothe my bruised ego. I'll follow you down, Sarah said, and lowered her goggles. Covering my arse in case I fall again. The woman launched herself forwards and gathered speed quickly. Something told Sarah she wouldn't make the same rookie error twice. She turned down the slope, her urge to compete replaced by a desire for something entirely different. the anticipation of having sex with a stranger was as enticing as the thought of tackling the most dangerous slopes in the world. Her husband, Mark, would applaud her for being herself. It was how they rolled. He did his thing, she did hers, and they never compromised their 15-year-old twins. She would return to London energized and better able to take on the demands of her career. She might even be a better mother for a few weeks. She could never be a better wife, though, and he never asked her to be. "My name's Brooke," the woman said, as they removed their jackets and boots. "Sarah." Brooke's hand was warmer than hers, and they stayed connected a fraction longer than normal etiquette dictated. It was one of the indicators that Sarah's gaydar was highly attuned to. The other was the way someone looked into her eyes. "It's good to meet you," she said, and Brooke's gaze lingered. "You ready for that drink?" Brooke asked.
"You bet."
Sarah studied her tight backside and strong legs as they wandered into the bar. "This has been my motivation all day," she said.
"The heat or the drink?"
Sarah rubbed her hands together, the burn in her cheeks an accolade for her day's efforts. Her well-exercised muscles could certainly benefit from a massage, but she would get one of those later. Perhaps Brooke would like one too. She had strong hands, and Sarah imagined her touch. She cleared her throat.
"Both. What can I get you?"
"A rum hot chocolate, thanks."
Sarah took a seat at the bar and smiled at the bartender drying glasses.
"Two rum hot chocolates, please."
"Coming right up."
He sounded as British as she did. He was probably a student who dreamed of becoming a famous snowboarder. He would probably end up an instructor, if anything. To be the best in any field was tough, and that's why very few people made it. It was that same seed of doubt that caused Sarah to push as hard as she did, to give herself the best chance at becoming the Prime Minister in what was still an environment riddled with prejudice. She tried to appear patient as he carefully and slowly prepared the drinks. The silence between strangers could be a little awkward, but Sarah didn't sense any tension with Brooke.
"Did you have a good day?" she asked.
"It was okay.
You?"
Sarah nodded. "I'm heading over to Tortan tomorrow, weather permitting. Do you want to join me?"
"You've skied it before?"
"Yes. You?"
"Sure. It's a beast, especially in this kind of wind. I broke my leg there 2 years ago."
Sarah winced and tapped the table.
"Touch wood, I've never broken anything."
Brooke shrugged. "Goes with the sport, eh?"
It did. And at some point, Sarah didn't doubt she would break something, but she never thought that way when skiing. If she did, she wouldn't take on the slopes and challenges. The bartender slid two tall glasses towards them. The dark chocolate reached three quarters of the way, and whipped cream made up the last quarter and extended another inch above the glass. A chocolate ball rested halfway into the top of the cream, and a straw stood upright in the cream's embrace. Sarah gave him her room number and signed the bill.
"Thanks," Brooke said.
She removed the straw, ate the chocolate, and sipped directly from the glass, leaving a thick white layer above her upper lip. Sarah laughed and pointed to Brooke's mouth.
"I know, can't help it, though."
She licked her lips and took another sip. Sarah sipped her drink and enjoyed the lustful look in Brooke's eyes. Brooke took another sip.
"These are great."
"They are."
Sarah took a long, deep breath and relaxed her shoulders. The sense of anticipation peaked in the pulse that throbbed between her legs.
"So, do you come here every year?" she asked.
1. January, 11 months later. The tinkling sound of the metal spoon on an almost empty champagne glass brought a hush to the small gathering. Sarah smiled as she scanned the jolly faces of her closest friends and family and valued colleagues. Her smile broadened as she settled her gaze on Mark and then on each of their twins. Reese's 15-year-old shoulders were now just short of his father's, and like Mark, he dressed in a dark blue suit. He gave her a double thumbs up and grinned. Abby, his twin, and a head shorter than her brother, wore her favourite combat trousers and a hoodie with a motif that read, "Save the planet to save humanity." Abby took a sip from her glass, and her gaze wandered around the room.
Abby wasn't a fan of speeches, or parties for that matter. She wasn't a fan of anything involving formality or business gatherings. The kids' dress codes mirrored their aspirations. Rhys wanted to follow in his father's footsteps and run his own IT company, whereas Abby was destined to work with nature in some way, though not as a vet, since she couldn't stand the sight of blood. Sarah inhaled deeply, and the warm feeling of pride expanded in her chest. In that moment, conquering the world seemed a very real possibility. She turned her attention to Haley, her longest-serving researcher in the constituency of Calder Valley. She'd been much more than that since she'd taken on Sarah's personal admin and had been a trusted confidant for over a decade. Haley stood with one hand on her heavily pregnant belly, presumably where baby Leon was kicking 10 bells out of her insides. She looked radiant and exhausted, in the way only a heavily pregnant woman could, and with just a couple of weeks until her due date, there was a chance of her giving birth before the evening was out. Sarah tapped the glass again and waited until a hush fell around the room. "I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for coming tonight. This is a very special occasion that leaves me with a feeling of both joy and sadness. Haley, come here." Sarah held out her hand, and Haley waddled 3 paces to her side. "I'm losing my closest supporter today." She glanced at Mark and smiled. He was definitely her closest advocate, and he knew it, but Haley had been her best friend, and while she was sure they would stay in contact, she doubted they would get to see each other much over the coming months. "I'm not going too far," Haley said, looking down at her stomach. She only lived up the road in the close-knit community of Todmorden, the centre of Sarah's local constituency. Sarah took Haley's hand. "I'm losing one of my closest friends, who leaves us today to start her life as a new mum. This is such an exciting time for you and John, and I'm sure I speak for us all when I say we hope you will continue to see us as a part of your extended family, as you will remain a part of ours. On behalf of all your colleagues, some of whom couldn't be here today, I'd like to present you with a small gift as a token of our appreciation for all that you've done for us over the past 11 years. Mark approached, pushing a pram with a blue bow tied around it.
"It's been a while since I pushed a pram," he said, and laughter spilled around the room.
"There's still time for a third," someone shouted.
Mark shook his head and laughed. Sarah smiled at him before turning her attention back to Haley. "So if you will, please raise your glass to Haley, John, and baby Leon. May your lives together be happy, healthy, and long." A cheer resonated around the room, Haley covering her mouth with her hand as she stared at the pram. Tears spilled onto her cheeks and she wiped them away.
"Oh, hell, I'm such a wreck."
"Wait till after Leon's born," someone shouted. "He'll have you in tears, all right."
Haley waved off the comment, laughing and crying simultaneously. She touched the silver handle of the pram.
"It's an eye candy. It's beautiful. Oh, God."
More tears rolled down her cheeks. She pulled out a tissue and blew her nose. Sarah put her arm around Haley's shoulders.
"Thank you all so much," Haley said.
"Good luck, Haley," Mark said, and another cheer came with the clinking of glasses. Sarah squeezed Haley to her.
"You deserve it." Her voice was low, broken with emotion. She would miss Haley terribly.
"You'll have to get a refund for the other one you bought. I hope you don't mind."
Haley laughed.
"For an eye candy? Are you kidding me? I'll have John take it back before tomorrow's out."
She tucked Sarah as close as she could get around the enormous bump.
"You'll be fine," she said, as if reading Sarah's mind. "You'll win. I know you will. And I think you'll really get on with Kendra. She's smart, enthusiastic, and as passionate about the environment as you. She has the same activist mindset you had when we first met, just a little raw around the edges when it comes to politics." Haley smiled. "You'll work well together."
"I hope so." Haley always seemed to know Sarah's thoughts and concerns. No one would live up to Haley's work. Local gossip had already decreed that whoever came into the job would be fated before they even started. That had been one of the reasons they'd decided to recruit Haley's replacement to work at the London office. Applications within the constituency had been low in number, and according to Haley, the CVs had been mediocre. The main driver for a London-based researcher was the fact that Sarah would be spending more time in Westminster in anticipation of her rise to leadership of the party, and hopefully from there to Prime Minister at some point in the future.
"I know so," Haley said.
Sarah eased out of the embrace, wiped a tear from her eye, and reached into her clutch bag. She pulled out an envelope.
"Anyway, this is from me and Mark and the kids. Hopefully you'll be able to find a few nice things for you and Leon."
Haley eased it open and peeked inside. Her eyes widened, and she launched herself into Sarah's arms. Sarah steadied herself as Haley's weight rocked her, and she held her as tightly as she dared.
"I'll miss you," she whispered.
Haley pulled back and smiled as she sniffled.
"I'm such a wreck," she said.
Sarah could relate. She'd become a version of herself she hadn't recognized, struggling with what she could only describe as an emotional breakdown during her pregnancy. That was before Haley had worked for her, but it had caused a strain on her working relationships at the time. She'd been a bitch, and her reputation had suffered for it. Pregnancy really did change some women. Haley had never been overly emotional before. Sarah had always admired Haley's grounded logic and her calming influence in Sarah's hectic life. The last 9 months had taken its toll on them both, and while it had tested their friendship at times, they'd come through it.
"You'll be back to your old self in no time," she said,
though she doubted that was ever truly possible. Children changed everything. She glanced across at Rhys. He was mingling with the guests, chatting amiably, like his father. Abby stood close to the window, with her attention seemingly more engaged by whatever was going on outside the room. Sarah loved her children more than anything, and even after 15 years, the twinge of guilt for having put her career ahead of them pricked from time to time. She wished she'd given them more of her time, and still questioned whether she was good enough. She'd made a choice to pursue her career long before the drunken night at uni with Mark, and long before her maternal instincts had blossomed. Best friends should never sleep together, they'd said, but they had. Pregnant with twins had never been in either of their plans, but abortion wasn't something they wanted either. Her parents had welcomed their marriage and the fact that Mark would take on the main support role, but she'd always felt as though she'd failed them. The distance she felt with the twins seemed even more tangible at rare times like this. They were more accustomed to their London life and private school education. Even though they were day boarders at Westminster School, she mainly got to see them on her weekly trip to the city to attend Parliament and undertake her duties as the Shadow Environment Minister. On the occasional weekend she spent in London, she often had to work from early morning until late at night. One of the reasons she and Mark had taken the decision for the children to be based in London was because it was safer there. As an MP, she was more vulnerable to the threat of a radical turning up on her doorstep and hurling abuse, or worse still, trying to attack her. Mark approached and took her hand. "You okay, love?" She nodded.
"Thank you."
"What did I do?"
"You're my rock."
"Your country needs you," he said.
She laughed, thankful he didn't make Churchill's victory sign. She hoped that what she'd given up would be worth it in the end. Projected to be the youngest Prime Minister in recent history. The news headlines had already ordained her this most prestigious title. Being the PM had been her dream since her father installed it when she was a young child, and according to the media, with no other viable contenders from her party and dwindling support for the current government, it was within easy reach. She could have done without Haley leaving now, though. Haley was her local equivalent of her aide, Jeremy, in Westminster. She needed competent people around her that she could trust to do the job. She didn't have the time or the patience to babysit someone. Gossip was probably right. She didn't rate her new administrator's chances of meeting Haley's standards. 2. Kendra plucked the empty lager can from the frosty hedgerow and dropped it into the black heavy-duty recyclable sack as she waited for the call to connect. Scumbags. The long ringtone gave the impression that the destination was a million miles away instead of Thailand. It would be dry season and 32 degrees, and it wasn't the first time she'd wondered what the hell kept her in the UK. Her family and her ambition were the answers, not the climate. That said, the rainy season in Cow's Sock wasn't all that either, according to her friend Mali. But at least it was warm and wet over there, rather than bloody freezing. The long tone with longer silent gaps continued as she ambled along the quiet country road, litter-picking. Mali was probably outside in the sun doing something interesting and useful with her day and her life. Mali had been a good friend and an activist for the environment since they'd met at a global warming rally in their late 20s. After 6 years of attending events together and talking of grand plans to wake up government, Mali decided lobbying was too much like banging her head against a steel wall. She left the UK to work on a conservation project on the edge of the Khao Lak Lam Rue National Park and set up a small, basic tourist destination. Kendra was still clearing up other people's crap from hedgerows on a weekend in Chesham, while Mali hadn't looked back since leaving. She located a plastic bottle lodged at the base of the hedgerow, battled to retrieve it, and dropped it in the sack. Every week it was the same thing. This beautiful green space, spoiled by toxic trash that had either been tossed from a passing car window by an oik who didn't give a shit, or swept from outside the houses on a gust of wind that had tipped the rubbish bins over, which happened frequently. The waste collectors didn't care either. She'd never understand the mentality of those people who didn't get how precious the earth was, but she'd learned from bitter experience not to challenge a litter oik, since they could be both abusive and aggressive, even though they were the ones breaking the law. The long tone broke out of sync with its standard rhythm, and the silence drew out as she waited for the voice to connect. She wondered what Mali would say about the job offer she'd received and the impact it had on her holiday plans. Kendra? She stood over a large pile of silver nitrous oxide canisters that had been cast aside at the verge. Fucking scumbags. A new greeting. Nice. Kendra laughed. You wouldn't believe the shit I'm clearing up here. Good to hear you're still doing your bit for our planet. How's the weather? She gathered the bottles into the sack. Apart from the big freeze. Mali laughed. My top is dripping with sweat. It's 34 degrees. The sun is glorious and the skies are a deep blue. Fuck off, Kendra laughed. Only 6 weeks, Kenny. She looked up into the thick grey blanket that hovered not too far from her head. How to tell Mali she wouldn't be going on holiday because she was starting a new job? Not liking the sweaty you image. TMI. But the heat would be nice. Mali laughed. So what did I do to deserve a call? Kendra wandered towards a large object she couldn't quite make out that had been discarded at the gated entrance to a field. I took a job. What, a proper job? That's cool. Gardening's a proper job. It's just... Her landscaping work had been great, but there was so much wrong with the way people treated their land. Opting for cheaper materials from dubious sources, the overuse of concrete, and too many clients wanting to circumnavigate regulations to make a bigger buck. She'd refused to take on contracts that compromised her morality, which had resulted in her working smaller, local jobs that didn't pay well. Yeah, I've got a proper job. Christ, I never thought I'd hear you say those words. Who in their right mind dumps a bath at the side of the road? Kendra tried to heave it from its hiding place. You what? Sorry, some arsehole has dumped one of those fuck-off huge acrylic bathtubs on the side of the road. It's a disgrace, and the council are doing jack shit about it. What's the job? Research and admin support. Okay. Sounds like an indoor job, bound to a desk and swamped in paperwork. You said you'd never tie yourself to an office job. Why don't you come here and work with me, build eco-lodges, save the elephants and tigers, and support the environment? Kendra dragged the bath to the side of the road and took a photo of it. She would report it to the council. You still coming on holiday? She bit her lip. Kenny? I'm sorry, I can't get the time off. I'll come later in the year when things have settled. She kicked at the grass, disappointed at having had to cancel. Damn. I know, it's a bummer.
I didn't want to push it. It's maternity cover for a year, and I want to give a good impression. A month off in the first 3 months wasn't going to cut it. Anyway, how's the project going?
Really good. We're building an education centre for visitors at the Elephant Park. We've just planted our 200th tree, and the regeneration of the Asian elephants is going great.
That's brill. It's amazing. You'd love it here.
Kendra drew on Mali's excitement and felt optimistic about what she might be able to achieve in her new role. They thought the same way and got a buzz out of the same things, and Kendra was ever hopeful that she could make change happen by appealing to ministers. Mali was the one person who seemed to understand her.
I'm going to work for the Environment Minister's office. My research could influence government policy at some point.
That was what the agency had told her, and the main reason she'd taken the role, since she'd have to commute into London. In truth, her work would only really matter if the party won the next election.
So you're going to be the activist inside government, like an environmental spy?
No, those days are over, but I think I could do something positive working on the inside.
Your dad must be ecstatic, a secure job with a decent pension.
Kendra laughed.
Don't remind me. I'm not doing it for that, and there isn't a pension yet, but don't tell him that.
So you're doing it for the laughs?
Kendra shook her head.
It's an opportunity. I'll be working on a range of projects spanning the country. I'll get the minister to take a good look at what's really happening to our planet, backed up with hard data, so she can lobby the government. If I do a good job, who knows where it might lead? At least I'll be doing something more than picking litter and campaigning for biodiversity outside the county offices, which is the equivalent of pushing water uphill.
What makes you think anyone will listen to you? This is politics you're talking about. It's a closed shop, and ministers only shift on environmental issues if they're forced by EU legislation, and since Brexit, who knows what will happen?
Hey, don't bust my delusional bubble. It might only be for a year, and I've got nothing to lose by trying.
You know what?
Kendra sighed.
What? You'll be great. You can lobby from the inside and work your way up. That was always the problem with lobbying from the outside. We were too far removed and too small a group to ever be taken seriously. You'll be the boss before you know it.
Ha! She wandered further up the road. If I wasn't working on environmental stuff, I wouldn't work in an office. Can you imagine having the ear of the minister? That could be career transforming. From gardener to aide to the PM. I can see the headlines now.
Mali laughed.
You jest. Watch this space.
3. Sarah thought about Rhys and Abby lying in their beds, making themselves late for school with every long stride into town. It was the same routine every morning whenever she worked at the London office. She would worry as soon as she stepped out of their terraced three-story townhouse and walked through the garden square and past the embassy buildings on her route towards Victoria, where she would hop on the tube to Westminster. It wasn't just the snide, sexist comments about not being able to be a good mother while being a good politician that she'd been subjected to from colleagues that tapped into her guilt, though they'd never helped. She'd struggled to find the right balance, though others seemed to find it easy. If she was all in on one thing, something else slipped. But it was more than that. Being there for her children was something special and time-limited and fulfilling in a way the job could never be. She'd felt that tug at her heart whenever she left them more often over the last couple of years, worried that something bad might happen to them or that she would never see them again. They were growing up quickly, and letting go was getting harder. The mahogany dining table in the window of the antique furniture shop caught her eye, with its elegant claw-like feet and polished surface. It would go well in her constituency home in Todmorden. Though she didn't stop to admire the piece, it was enough of a distraction to claim her attention from her slumbering children. She should be filled with optimism and hope on the first day back to work after the new year. Instead, she had to look forward to the new researcher starting. She didn't like change unless she was driving it, and the timing of Haley's departure couldn't be more inconvenient. The icy breeze whipped up as she turned from the shelter of the buildings and headed towards Cafe Nero. The distinctive coffee aroma and freshly baked pastries greeted her as she entered. Her cheeks tingled, reminding her of last year's skiing trip. Brooke said she visited Verbier every second week in February.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?